He's played it in. Good save from Long. Big, strong hand. It needed to be. His body sliding the other way, and it's a big, strong hand there from George Long to stop the ball dead.
Hello, this is the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me and Matt Beadle here with the voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee. How are you, Richard?
I'm devilishly well.
Good, good. I feel like it's been a long time since we last saw each other.
Ah, see what you've done there. There's a reason for that, isn't there, Matthew?
There, indeed, there is a reason. Because this week's guest is a goalkeeper who enjoyed the first chunk of his career as a Blade with Sheffield United. Whilst at Bramall Lane, he became the youngest goalkeeper to ever appear for the club and earn call-ups to the England under 18, 20 and 21 sides. The latter coming not too long after a spell of 8 clean sheets in 9 games across 3 months in 2013. Now very much Hull City's number one in the Championship, George Long, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hi guys, thanks for having me on.
Delighted to have you on. Now, often we start with a stat or something quirky from one's career, I should say. But I think for the first time ever on this podcast, I'm going to keep it rather straight down the middle and simply say, George Long, how's life? How is life in the wonderful world of Hull goalkeeper, George Long?
Very good, yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's been a great start to season, just enjoying playing Championship football. And I think with the team, we could be higher up in the league just with the performances we're putting in. But it's just about turning those good performances into 3 points. Like we conceded a late one yesterday, which could have been a win for us. But I think I said to Richard before, the main thing is we're playing well. So I think we'll be all right.
Now, I don't often do that. I mean, Rich will attest to that. There's often something a little bit different. But just from looking at your career, I'm actually quite interested, because when we do look at it, and don't you worry, we will get in to the nitty and gritty of all of that, of course. But when we look back at it, you've been on a relative journey, I suppose, to get to where you are now. The standard ups and downs we know and love from the life of a goalkeeper. And let's not forget, you're just still 25 years old. So now you're at Hull. You look as though you are the number one for the foreseeable, having been that at Sheffield United and then having things change. But in terms of your trajectory at Hull, I suppose, it is going good. Would you say that this season is arguably the biggest season in your career?
Potentially, yeah. I think wherever you are is the biggest at the time. You can only control what's in front of you. As in, I can't be looking too far ahead. I just take it, make sure all my performances are right, my preparation's spot on, and then you go from there, really. I don't like piling too much pressure on this. Say, if I don't get it right this time, then what? I sort of take a relaxed view to it, prepare right, do the basics well in training, and then the games look after themselves.
Well, it's interesting, and I know from previous conversations we've had, you're quite thoughtful when it comes to your game, aren't you? I know that you do a lot away from football to make sure that your mindset's in the best possible place. Do you want to give an idea of some of the things you'll do away from football to help maximise your career?
Well, it's sort of changed over the years, really. I think before, when I was a youngster, I was trying to tick every box in the book, like trying to do everything down to a T. And I think it can be a detriment to you if you're trying to do everything right. It becomes a bit overbearing and can have a detriment on your performance. So I think it's finding the right balance of preparation, doing things properly, you know, outside of football, but still having things going on that are completely different from football, whether that's enjoying your golf, taking the dog out for a walk, just anything like that. So it's about finding that balance. I think at the minute, I think I've sort of found that, but it's always work in progress.
You came in under Nigel Adkins, George, who'd previously managed you at Sheffield United. David Marshall at the time remained as number one for your first campaign. Both Marshall and Adkins have since moved on. Boss Grant McCann is obviously the new man in charge. He's made you the first choice, so it's fair to say you grabbed it with both hands. And I just want to talk about that first clean sheet in the win over Luton. There were kind of really ferocious celebrations from you with the travelling support at the end of the game. Yeah. Is that quite telling, the fact that it was your first clean sheet and you're now the number one? Or is that you just being you? Because I know that we saw it during your spell with Wimbledon, the season that they clinched survival at Doncaster. You were there with the fans doing the big, Ray, Ray. So is it something that you like doing with fans?
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of a few things. Obviously, first clean sheet, which me and the defenders, we were all delighted with. And it's not an easy place to go, Luton, to get 3 points. And then I think, just any opportunity where you get a victory and it's a great feeling, I think you've got to make the most of it. So I just enjoy, you know, that celebration with the fans, and obviously they've travelled a long way. So I think, yeah, it was just a good feeling to get a win and a clean sheet. So,
just want to touch on the goalkeeping unit that you've got there, because you know, very aware that everyone we speak to, there's it's always interesting to see how a goalkeeping unit is made up. So often you'll find you've got the goalkeeper that's playing, i.e. yourself. Then you might have maybe an older number two, or in some cases an older number three or a younger number three. And there's a composition of the one, two and three to try and get the best of all goalkeepers. It's quite an interesting one that you've got there, and that they've obviously brought in Matt Ingram, who is similar age, and obviously this, it was a bit of a fight, I'm guessing, initially, but it must be quite nice in some ways to have somebody like that alongside you, where you've got a real battle between you, two very promising goalkeepers, of course, and then also a word on your goalkeeper coach as well, Barry Richardson, of course, previously with Wickham Wanderers, top goalkeeper coach. How is the goalkeeping unit there?
It's brilliant, to be honest, obviously Matt signed in the summer, so he's come to wanting to play as well, so it's just been really healthy competition. Like pushing training, the standards are always so high. You can't take your foot off the gas when everyone's at it day in, day out. And like I said, Baz, he drives that as well, the goalkeeper coach. He's been brilliant. He's always pushing as hard in training. And even, like say, after the Luton game, you come off 3 points clean sheet. First thing he's like, listen, distribution could be a bit better. And I'm but that's what you need, I think, is... there's always room to improve, and there's always scope for getting better. So I think it's Baz has been brilliant for me, especially last season. We did so much work on the training ground, but obviously I wasn't playing, so you don't really get to see what you've been working on and put it into practice in games. So I think now this season it's sort of putting all that stuff in place, and it's there to sort of showcase in the matches. So. He's been brilliant, but I can't speak highly enough of him.
Yeah, well, do you know something, and you've touched on it a few times this conversation already, about the idea of improvement and how you can maximise your game, because look, it's an obvious statement, but the age you're at, if you can, and given what you've done already, I mean, you've had the most extraordinary career, which we're going to touch on shortly, but the amount of highs, lows, the amount of experience that you've had at the age you're at, if the next 2-3 years go to plan, then who knows where it could lead. It could be a really exciting late 20s and into your 30s. One of the things I just want to touch on, and I don't know if you still do this, but I remember when we spoke previously, it's something that I still do quite a bit of, and something that I really advise goalkeepers, young goalkeepers, to do, given that you talk a lot about balance, is meditation. I know that you used to do a little bit of meditation, if I remember rightly. Is that something that you still do?
Yeah, I still do that. I do it probably 10 or 15 minutes every day. I've got an app called Headspace, which I'd recommend to anyone who wants to get started. It's quite an easy one, just crack it on, whether you want to do 5 minutes, 10 minutes, just press play, close your eyes and have a chill out. It's just nice to just have a bit of quiet time, really. You know, it's too easy to just sit on your phone scrolling through Instagram. It's a bit, you catch yourself doing it, but it's just something away from everything. Just chill out, have 10 minutes, and then go again. So
do you know what? So I do exactly the same. I use the same app. I didn't know you use Headspace as well. I have to look, because I know there's a community part of it where you can see who else is meditating at the same time. So I'll see if I can I can find. But do you know what?
Doesn't that go against the whole point of it? You're looking on your phone to see who else is on this app.
But do you know what? The point is, I guess for a lot of people, like, this is, it'll be so alien to most people. So when I talk to people about it, I've got my reasons for why I do it. And for me, it's now different, obviously, post-career and the amount of thoughts that I have on a day-to-day basis, business-related and certainly still goalkeeper-related. Yeah. Like, what is the reason you do it, and what's the benefit you found from doing it for our... Again, we get a lot of goalkeepers, goalkeeper coaches that listen in. So, like, why would they, for instance, take up meditation?
I suppose it's just practicing quiet in your mind, really. So I could use a goalkeeping analogy. Say you've made a mistake in a game, and then you've got thoughts firing in your head. You're like, oh, what about this? What if the manager drops me? What if the fans are on your back? That sort of thing. It's just practice of, it's sort of like repetition of, all right, bring it back, get back in the quiet zone and crack on with your work, that sort of thing. So that's from a goalkeeping point of view. But for just everyday life, it's just nice just to sit there quiet for 10 minutes. And just every time your mind starts wandering, bring it back to whatever you're focusing on, whether it's your breath or just nothing at all. So I think that's why I use it, just not so much just for football, just everyday life, just to chill out. So
yeah, do you know what? And I'll add to that, because I think, and this is where again, as a bit of advice for those listening in, and a lot of people kind of question what the benefits are. There's all sorts of different health benefits that you can look up on.
Yeah.
But for me, it was actually more of a concentration thing, because certainly in the world that we're in now, where Matt touched on it, there's so much going on all the time, whether it's quickly scrolling through social media, whether it's how many people sit there with the TV on, scrolling through social media and music playing at the same time. You know, your focus is all over the place. So to actually... Yeah. improve your concentration. Reading's a great thing as well, but to sit there in complete silence, it's actually very, very difficult, even for 5 minutes, for people to do now. So I think for a goalkeeper, you have to concentrate for 90 minutes. You have to be bang on with your game.
A bit of a random question, George. Do you have to find like a quiet place? Do you do it at home? Do you find like a quiet place in your house away from family and anybody else?
You just go in another room, sit down, or it's probably good practice to do it where it's noisy as well, because that's putting distractions in the way, isn't it? So I think anywhere, really, as long as it's you're not getting too distracted, I think it's good practice.
But it kind of links in nicely, and again, this is more from, I guess, me for the listeners, is the art of visualization, to be able to see what's about to happen before it happens. So you mentioned that, I mean, you play in some of the, you know, playing, it's a cauldron, it can be at times, obviously playing for Hull in some of the stadiums in the Championship. So to be able to think clearly and have that focus when you've got 40,000 people screaming, that in itself is a skill. And I think the power of meditation, the power of visualization, going through what it is that you're about to go through before you play a game, is also quite important. Do you do any visualization?
Well, I've found you play your best football when you're not thinking, when it's just autopilot. You think, bloody, that's a full game gone, and you're not really thought about anything. I think when you start over analysing during the game or thinking too much, it can be a detriment to your performance. It becomes too slow, and it's not what you've worked on over the years. So I think on autopilot, you know your job, you're cracking on with it. So I think that's what I've found, especially in games.
I guess this also builds into you being more sure of yourself as a person and, I should say, a leader. There were some interesting quotes from Grant McCann recently, and I'm quickly going to read out to you, because he said, Longy has taken it upon himself now where he's becoming a leader. I'm sure you're probably aware of these. You know, he said, you can sense that now every day in the way he trains and speaks in the changing room. He's enjoying it. He senses now that he's got the shirt and he doesn't want to lose it. In terms of becoming a leader in the dressing room, do you feel like you are now that at Hull City?
Yeah, I'd like to think so, yeah. Not so much trying to become it, just the way I go about training every day, the standards I set, you know, speaking to the lads before the game, making sure just having a word with individuals, maybe in the back four, making sure we've all got our jobs nailed down, and then a little bit before we go out to play a game. So I think it's just come over time, and putting little bits in place, then it accumulates, and then before you know it, then the manager might pick up on it. I've not actively gone out think, right, I need to be the leader of it. It's just the things you do day in, day out. It's just the consistency of how you train, how you speak to people, the relationship you have with the manager, the staff, goalkeeper, coach, the staff in the kitchen. It's just, I think it's everything, really. So, yeah, it's obviously nice to hear that coming from the manager.
Fellaini in, now it's Schweinsteiger through. Herrera looks for Rooney. Is this the moment? Good goalkeeper, George Long. Manchester United haven't worked the Sheffield United goalkeeper enough. That's the mark of a good goalkeeper. Alert, decisive and brave.
Okay, so the aforementioned journey to where you are now. Now, we're not going to dwell on this too much because you are now a Hull player. So we will go on to life with Sheffield United. But what I'm going to try and do is encapsulate it all in one go. So bear with me. There were loan spells with Oxford, AFC Wimbledon and Motherwell, but it's the in and out nature of that time, I think, at Bramall Lane, which I find particularly interesting. You made your debut, as you said, at the top at 17 on the final day of the 2010-11 season. Lost 4-0 to Swansea, didn't matter. The club were already relegated at the time. But what did matter was that you became the youngest goalkeeper to play in a league game for the Blades at just 17 years and 183 days. You played a few games the following campaign and then bagged a four-year deal in the summer of 2012. Michael Howard was the number one at the time. He got injured, you came in. You won the Player of the Month award in your first full run of games as a pro in that 2012-13 season. Conceded just 1 in 6 league games in October. And then, as we said again at the top, you kept 8 clean sheets in 9 games across February, March and April. That incredibly landed you another Player of the Month award. You were still just 19 at the time. That season, the club just missed out, on reaching the League One playoff final. You started the following season as number one. The side then went 10 games without a win, including six straight defeats in that run. And as is so often the case, as Rich will mention, I'm sure, the goalkeeper tends to be the fall guy in such a scenario. So in February, Mark Howard came back into the side. That coincided with a 9-game winning streak under Nigel Clough. Just reading this, by the way, is mad. Incredibly, you then played just once more that season, despite being a regular, before going on loan to Oxford and then Motherwell for pretty much the entirety of the following campaign. We're now in the summer of 2015. You're in and out of the Blades side again until you regained the number one spot from Michael Howard in November and went on to play every game until the end of the season. You signed for a further 2 years with the option of a third under Chris Wilder, who now we know, of course, is the manager in the Premier League. It's all looking rosy. Everything's fine. You played the first four games of 2016-17. Then Chris Wilder brings in Simon Moore from Cardiff, the Isle of Wight international, no less, Simon Moore, as well as promoting Aaron Ramsdale from the youth team. Incredibly, you then just play 5 games all that season before a season-long loan spell with AFC Wimbledon follows in 2017-18 and then ultimately the move to where you are now, Hull City. Right, I think that just about wraps it up. I guess from my perspective...
I forgot about half of that.
I know Rich will want to delve into the psychology of all of this, but I find that pretty mental. You were in, you were out, you signed new deals and then you were loaned out having already established yourself and played a decent amount of games for the club. The Aaron Ramsdale thing as well, I think, is interesting because in a sense, I guess, he was effectively being treated as the new you, I suppose, if I can say that, having come through the ranks in similar circumstances. George, I'm just going to throw it over to you.
Yeah, that's I'll speak about that. That's probably the most interesting part of it, where I signed a new deal the summer Chris Wilder came in. Yeah, signed a new deal as the number one. The team and myself personally didn't start that well. I made a mistake in a game which ended up being a draw, and I could tell from the off it wasn't quite working. And the manager I'd heard sniffs that he was trying to get someone else in. So he'd signed Simon Moore, which is a funny story anyway, because he goes from the guy he's brought in to replace me to be one of my best friends. So it's an interesting one anyway. I've gone from being number one to then number three. They bumped Aaron Ramsdale up to sit on the bench behind Si. And now, obviously, Aaron's playing Premier League for Bournemouth, so he's not done bad either. I don't know if I played a game the rest of that season. We've obviously got promoted to the Blades up to the Championship, and then I've gone on loan to AFC Wimbledon the next year, so... Quite an interesting couple of years.
Yeah, well, there's two people I really want to touch on. I like to bring in a lot of the goalkeeper coaches because I'm no doubt there are several ones that are quite important to you during your career. But the two in particular, obviously Sheffield United, I'm assuming you worked under Darren Ward for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And of course, Wimbledon. And I was in close contact throughout this season with Ashley Bayes, the Wimbledon.
Yeah.
He's a little bit mental, I think it's fair to say. Yeah. And I think he would agree with that comment. But for me, one of the best goalkeeper coaches out there that I've seen. I've watched so many of his warm-ups and I'm... from the way he talks, the passion he has towards goalkeeping. And both of them, in fact, Darren Ward, of course, the amount of goalkeepers that have come through him and Sheffield United, a lot of credit to him. Just a quick word on those two.
Yeah, I'll start with Wardy. Wardy was my goalie coach probably about a good 4 years when I was at Sheffield United. So I think he's pretty much been there when I've ever played for United. Wardy was brilliant, helped me develop through the years. He's had a great track record with goalkeepers, obviously. Rammer's come through, signed as a 16-year-old. Now he's playing Premier League and then currently with Dean Henderson. He's done a fantastic job with them both. And obviously Henderson's playing in the Premier League now and he'll not be far from England call-up either. And probably Rammer's as well if they both continue playing Premier League football. And then to touch on Bezo, he was brilliant for me. He's like you said, he is mental. But in a really good way. He loves goalkeeping, loves training. Like we're out early every day at Wimbledon. We're probably on the grass for too long at times. Like a good 2.5 hours every day, just doing drills, crossing, shot stopping, loads of things. His sessions were different every day, so it always kept it interesting. And I developed so much at Wimbledon, and I think that was a massive year for me to play the whole season. Do well and then get a move to the Championship with Hull. So I can't speak highly enough of Bezo, and I think he'll move on at some point and get climb up the ladder as a goalkeeping coach.
What was it like from a mindset perspective for you, though, George, when you were, you know, you came into the side as a young goalkeeper, you got the run of games, you got the Player of the Month awards, everybody was lauding you as Sheffield United number one, and then you were in and out of the side, and you mentioned the Simon Moore thing there and the fact that you did end up becoming best mates as well. I'd just like to know, in terms of you hearing whispers, like you said, that maybe Chris Wilder was looking to get someone in. It's not uncommon that we have that on this podcast, where a goalkeeper mentions the fact that he was at a club and he hears that maybe the club he's with are looking to bring in another goalkeeper. What was that like for you, having to deal with that psychologically? And then just speak to us about that friendship that you then developed with Simon Moore.
Yeah, firstly, when you know they're trying to bring another goalkeeper, and it's obviously not great, because you're thinking, he's obviously not having me as the number one. So it doesn't help your job, and doesn't make it any easier. And then obviously they went and signed Si about four games into the season, and he's just a great guy. I know you know him well, Rich.
Yeah,
he's just a lovely guy, really, really top man, and a brilliant goalkeeper as well, and he did fantastic for Sheffield United that season. I think he was in PFA Team of the Year, and obviously we got promoted that season. So I can't speak highly enough of Si. He ended up moving about two doors away from me in Sheffield as well. So we had a good coffee club on the go that year.
He does it. Do you know what? He's one actually that I've got on my hit list to get on the podcast, actually. So you can let him know next time you speak to him that we're getting him on. Because you're right, he was, to see his progression from Brentford, and just to give a quick word on Si for those that know, he's obviously sat on the bench at the moment waiting for his chance. But the progression from Brentford, where he was, and quite an innocent lad from the Isle of Wight, to then make his way in football, it's not easy going into a professional environment. A lot of people, again, listening in, I'm sure they wonder how it is when you step into the world of professional football. And initially, he had the usual kind of challenges you go through, but the way in which he battled, for me, it was the attitude, actually, he showed. It was the willingness to want to be the best at everything, and the questions he'd ask. He'd be forever asking questions on how he could improve, and credit to him, because he's gone above and beyond. And I still think there's loads more to come, certainly, and certainly a Premier League career, playing Premier League career ahead of him. Just want to go back to you in terms of your progression and your game, because, again, for a lot of our listeners listening in, looking to improve, certainly the younger goalkeepers that are listening that want to maximise their game, how do you deal with that? So, for instance, you come through 17 years old, which is extraordinary, by the way. I didn't make my debut until I was 21, I think, if I remember rightly. So to make your debut for Sheffield United, of all teams as well, at the age of 17 is extraordinary. In some ways, I guess then, there is, because there's so much more improvement to come, I wonder if there's any negative to that in a weird way, that you've suddenly made it to such a high level at such a young age.
Yeah, there's probably two sides to the coin. It's brilliant getting in the team and making your debut at 17. But as you know, as a goalkeeper, you've still got a lot of mistakes to make. You've still got a lot of learning to do. And it's sort of, even now, it's never ending, the learning and developing. So it wasn't a case of at 17, right, you're going on loan to a conference team, then you'll go League Two the next year, then League One. Yeah. You're sort of like thrust straight into the Sheffield United first team. And then, like I said, you're making mistakes in front of 20,000 and the cop behind you. So I think it was a great experience for me to develop and play at such an early age at a club like Sheffield United. I think it's been brilliant for my career. It's obviously not gone to plan at all times, but nothing ever does. It's not a script. It's not easy. So I think it's just all character building as well. You're in the team, you're out the team, you make mistakes, you have good games. It's pretty much the life of a goalkeeper. So I think it was good for my career on the whole.
Do you know what this is? So I'm going to give, I suppose, a similarity between you and Alex McCarthy. So I remember that Alex McCarthy came to Brentford when he was younger and had a bit of an indifferent time, it's fair to say. And then a few years later, he's now riding high. You know, he's top-end Premier League with Southampton. If I remember rightly, you went to Oxford, and it was a bit of a mixed time at Oxford.
Yeah.
It's a good. But I suppose the point that I'm getting to for a lot of the goalkeepers listening in is that it's not necessarily that it gets harder the higher you play. And I believe this anyway, that I think, you know, I played a few games in the Premier League, and they weren't necessarily the toughest games I had to play, because that's a very different game that you play in the Premier League, in the Championship, than perhaps you would play in League Two Conference. In some ways, playing in League Two Conference, you have different things to deal with. You might feel the elements that bit more because the stadiums aren't quite so big. You might, the pitch might not be quite so good. The quality opposition is a bit different. They're piling balls in on you. Did you find a slight difference when you went on loan to some of these teams than perhaps now when you're playing for Hull City?
Yeah, like you said, it's just different aspects of the game, right, mate? Maybe, like, say, on loan at Oxford in League Two, there's balls flying in the box, the stadiums are open, it's windy, the elements, the goal mouths are bog and you're trying to hoof it just to get it in the other half. There's all sorts going on, and I was still a young lad at that time, maybe, I think I might have been 19. It's my first loan spell and it didn't quite go to plan at Oxford, so I came, I think I played 10 or 11 games there, came back to Sheffield United, and then ended up going on loan to Motherwell in the, I think it was deadline date in the January. But then had a great time at Motherwell. We ended up staying in the SPL. We finished second bottom in the SPL, which means you can go to a playoff with the second top in the Championship, which was Rangers at the time. So we had a home and away leg against Rangers. Ended up going to Ibrox, playing there in front of about 50,000.
Wow.
Had a great game, beat them 3-1, and then we beat them 3-0 at home. So it was an amazing season for me and one that really pushed me on. And I loved up there. I can't speak highly enough of the SPL, just especially for a goalkeeper, if they think, or should I go up there? It's just great experience, good league as well. It's a bit of a bubble. And obviously, you get the big games. You've got Celtic, Rangers, Hearts, Hibs. So it's a great league.
Interesting. And it's funny you mentioned Oxford as well. I mean, you say that it didn't quite work out. That's fair enough. But Ryan Clarke obviously said that you were a Trojan when I was reading those quotes. Said you had absolutely everything, and actually your application in training is what inspired him to get back fit quicker.
Yeah, well, to back that up as well, I know, speaking to Ashley Bayes, like, he could not speak highly enough about you, your time there. And I just wanted to touch on that, because in terms of improvement, the individual techniques, your work ethic, you know, we touched on Simon Moore, how hard he trained. I know that you're every bit as much. I can imagine you two together, you probably just, I can imagine you had a key to get in and a key to get out. So Has that always been your mentality, to try and find those little elements of your game that maybe aren't quite where you want them to be, and it is that continual improvement?
Yeah, definitely. I remember my dad bought me a book when I might have been 16 at the time, called Bounce. I don't know if you ever read it.
Matthew Syed, yep.
Matthew Syed, yeah.
I don't think there's ever any doubt that Rich hasn't read that book, George.
Yeah, I knew he would. I just thought I'd throw it out there.
Yeah.
So I remember reading that, and it was sort of like a light bulb went off. I was like, wow, there's no secret formula. It's literally put the time in, put the practice in, and then you should get wherever you want to be. So it was about repetition, kicking after training, doing extras in the gym, stretching, and everything that goes into being a top athlete or top goalkeeper. And I feel like I've consistently carried that on from being 16 to now, and added bits along the way, took bits out, what's working, what's not. So and even now, like this summer, I've been working a lot on my right foot, like in the off season. I just take a bag of balls up to the Astro where I live and just ping them for about an hour. Mm. Just working on repetition. So I don't think it ever stopped, really.
Do not, and just to add to that, so those that and I know there are a lot of our listeners always looking for book recommendations. So Bounce, he talks about essentially 10,000 hours to excellence. This idea that if you do something for 10,000 hours, you'll become excellent at what it is that you put your time into. Now, it's not obviously as accurate as that, because a lot of it will then come down to the whole idea of practice makes, it doesn't make perfect, it makes permanent. So, of course, if you're training the wrong things all the time, then you're not necessarily going to become exceptional at that particular talent. However, if you do have the right coaching and you're willing to put in the work and you realise that there are no shortcuts, and I think a lot of people are always looking for those shortcuts, then in time you can maximise what it is that you do. Now, there's arguments about whether physically you might have the potential, which obviously you do, being the size you are, you've got lovely shape to you and the way in which you move, you know, someone like yourself, I guess, if you're willing to put in the effort, then given the, that's the nature nurture again, isn't it, but given the basic attributes that you've already got, then if you can maximize that, then of course you do have a chance, and it's only a chance, it's never guaranteed, but you do have a chance of progressing. Just on that note, Matthew, I'll just make a note, there's also another excellent book out there, Matthew Beadle. It's called Graduation, Life Lessons of a Professional Footballer.
Of course it is.
I've read that as well.
You read
Oh no. Have you really, George?
I have, yeah.
No comment. Amazing. No comment.
Just do you know what? I haven't read it yet. I keep meaning to read it, but something just stops me. I always find something just slightly better on the bookshelf to grab. By the way, just on the 10,000 hour thing, that was Malcolm Gladwell, wasn't it? It has kind of been disproven, hasn't it, that theory?
Basically, I think it's too simplistic. That's the way that I understand it. The basic idea, I think, makes sense to me, and I'll be interested to get your thoughts longer, Ian, that the basic idea to me is that, look, of course, if you get the best coaching you can possibly get and you're in an environment where you can improve, then of course you've got a great chance. It's all good and well saying, right, practice 10,000 hours to be a goalkeeper, you in a wall and just keep throwing the ball against the wall. Well, you're not going to become a goalkeeper. You know, you need to have quality goalkeeper coaching. And that's not just shot stopping. Of course, now it's the distribution side. I know there's some excellent kicking coaches out there. It's working on the positional side of the game, the tactical side, your nutritional intake, etc., etc. There's so many different parts to a goalkeeper's game.
Yeah, I think especially when you get to sort of this level, there's not much to choose between keepers. Everyone's decent shot stopper. Everyone can kick it well. So I think what I've been working on with Barry Richardson at Hull is just the fine margins of tweaking your positioning in a game or different scenarios. Looking back at our videos from the game, we'll sit down on a Monday or Tuesday after a Saturday game, go through my clips, and just fine-tune different things. It might be half a step this way means you tip it around the post, or the highest starting position on a cross means you can come and get it. So I think that's like the marginal gains to be had at this level, instead of just catching volleys against the wall. Like, every goalkeeper at this level can catch volleys. So it's not really a case of doing 100 more of them a day. It's the different side of the game where people won't see it, but like I said, just analysing your game and improving week in, week out.
Can we talk a bit more about Swaz? Because I like talking about Swaz on this show and the fact that your distribution, like you said, is good. And I don't know whether it's because you've got the left foot, like we see with Edison. Sometimes when goalkeepers are... You were left-footed, weren't you, Rich?
I was, yeah. I disproved that.
Yeah. another theory disproved.
But
left-footers often look slightly better when they do ping a ball. But the Swaz that you have, and you mentioned the season-long loan at Wimbledon, I think it really came to the fore then, because you could really tell in that season the link-up you had with Kwesi Appiah up front, with Lyle Taylor... Even I think you set up a few goals as well from your distribution from the back.
Yeah, me and Lyle had a great connection on the pitch. It was sort of, as soon as I'd catch a ball or pick it up in the box, he was on his bike and he'd make the runner and find him. So managed to get him in on goal a couple of times. I got a couple of assists that season just from putting him in behind. So, and it's similar now at Hull. We've got Camille Grzycki and Jared Bowen on either wing. So as soon as I catch it, then too, they're both rapid, but they can both bomb in behind. So it's great for a goalkeeper if you just put them in behind, let them do the work. So it's something I've worked on as well, the side volley or throwing it in behind. So, yeah, it's just always work in progress and trying to put it into practice in the games.
I've got another question kind of on this, George. It's a little bit weird, so bear with me again. But we discuss your development as a goalkeeper. But I just want to touch on your physical development. And I know that, you know, as men, we all grow up and muscles develop and we get bigger. But when I look at images of you as a 17-year-old to images of you now, you're massive. You're absolutely, like, you've grown so considerably and your biceps are huge. Do you do specific exercises? I know we can talk about bicep curls and chin-ups and all the rest of it, but have you worked quite heavily on that in the gym?
Yeah, I'll be honest, I've never done a bicep curl, so that's that one out there.
Wow. Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. I do gym probably every day, to be honest, whether it's upper body, legs, core. I've been enjoying Pilates as well. I quite enjoy that. Do that on my days off on a Wednesday. So, yeah, I love the gym as well. It's not a chore for me. I enjoy going in, and I think I always will, so it's just important to, especially as a goalkeeper, being strong in the box, getting knocked around, people flying into you, and obviously being robust from an injury point of view. So the stronger your legs are or your upper body is, the less likely you are to get injured. So I think it's just a few, there's loads of benefits from it, but I really enjoy it as well.
Just a couple of things. Firstly, I'm slightly concerned about my co-host's fascination with your biceps, which I'm going to talk to him about.
Oh, yeah, I'm wondering where he's seen that.
Yeah, he's just showing me all sorts of pictures as we speak. Secondly, in the gym, again, lots of different types of gym work that you can do. One of which I know a lot of goalkeepers do is plyometrics. For those that don't know what plyometrics is, it's effectively spring training, improving your spring. Yeah. Do you do a lot of plyometric work?
Yeah, we do quite a bit. Our fitness coach, Matt Busby at Hull City, he's fantastic. So for an example of legs and plyometrics, we might do 3 reps on a heavy squat. So you'd have in the squat rack, squat 3 reps heavy, might be 100 kg up to 150. And then straight from that into box jumps. So you've loaded your legs, then there's nothing on your back and you're flying onto a box, just jumping on. And then you feel like you can float just because of the load you've had on previously. Yeah, there's loads to do. I think you can find everything online on Instagram. There's plenty of pages, and I quite like looking at the American sports, what they do, especially the NFL and basketball players. There's loads of coaches who work with those guys, and they put up brilliant drills and always new stuff to try, so I really enjoy that part of it.
Do you know, it's funny you say, I don't know if we've had this conversation before, but that's exactly what I did as an 18-year-old. There were so many adverts out there about how you could improve your spring by X amount of inches, so I actually downloaded a basketball program, and the exact thing you've just spoke about there, the heavy squats followed by the drop jumps, followed by hurdle jumps I used to do as well, and there was all sorts of different ones, different terms that they had in basketball. But do you know what, that, I think it was the following season I made my breakthrough, and I look back now, do you know, the only thing I would say, and this is just a word of warning for those that are looking at taking this on, is I never had the base, so I probably never had the core strength or the strength in my thighs, and I actually ended up having a knee problem, which was maybe because I overloaded without doing that. But I think if you can get that base and do the plyometrics, it's amazing how much more powerful you can be, right?
Yeah, definitely. Add so much to your game. It's just like I said, for spring, for preventing injuries. But if you think of it as that extra inch of jump might mean you're tipping one round the post to win a game, or you're coming to claim a cross, which you might not get before. So it's just adding little bits, whether that's in the gym or recovery, anything you like. But yeah, the gym's massive for goalkeepers, and I think pretty much everyone does it nowadays, whereas a few years back it was a bit of a take it or leave it for lads.
Vucic has a bit of space, and it's Vucic. George Long up to the task. Foster. Oh, it's one of the best balls of the night. And Chris Boyd thought that was going in, but then there was George Long.
Inspiration, George, and Joe Hart in particular. I read somewhere that you said he was a player that you modelled yourself on when you were first getting into goalkeeping, someone that you noticed. I just want to talk about him and your views on him as a goalkeeper of the past and a goalkeeper of the present as well. There was an article out recently on the disappearance, shall we say, of Joe Hart and the fact that, you know, he's now back on the bench at Burnley. Do you still see, because we get a lot of people on the podcast as well who say Joe Hart, for me, still England's number one goalkeeper. He just needs to sort a few things out and find his way and get a decent run in the team. In terms of the goalkeeper that you used to watch compared to the goalkeeper that currently exists as Joe Hart, what are your views on those two?
Growing up, he was in Birmingham in the Premier League, so watched him there. I used to watch his highlights on YouTube, and then obviously he's in the Man City team as England's number one as well. So he was just someone to look up to. He's English, similar stature, and he was brilliant, fantastic goalkeeper to watch, and really, really loved it. Just seeing what he did, how he held himself in the goal, saves he was making, commanding his back four. And then obviously now it's not quite gone as everyone thought it would do for him. I think that came from Pep Guardiola coming in at City and sort of saying he wasn't good enough with his feet and brought in Claudio Bravo. So I think it's just been a bit of a roller coaster for him from there. But it'd be interesting to see how it does develop, whether he's obviously stayed in England and no doubt wants to get a Premier League shirt back and then get back in the England team. So I hope he does, because I think he's fantastic. So looking forward to seeing how that progresses.
I think we're going to hear more of this in the future as well, of keepers who are coming up now, teenage goalkeepers, 20-year-old goalkeepers who are going to be saying, you know, Joe Hart was the guy that I looked at, just like we hear goalkeepers of the past saying, I looked at Peter Shilton, I looked at Ray Clements, for example. Another goalkeeper who has hopes and dreams of playing for England is Dean Henderson. Of course, Sheffield United at the moment, your former club. Just wanted to quickly touch on him. And in particular, we discuss goalkeeper errors, shall we say. And as of recording this weekend, Dean Henderson made an error in the defeat to Liverpool, just like Hugo Lloris did in Tottenham's win over Southampton. Both of them then went on to make very good saves in the game and bounce back very well. But Dean Henderson and that particular error, and him as Sheffield United, and his dreams as well of being an England goalkeeper. Do you see that happening?
Yeah, I think he'll play for England. Just from what he's done so far in his career. I had about a week and a half with Dino. I think it was last pre-season at Sheffield United before I left for Hull. And he was a great lad. I'd heard a few things beforehand from different people, as in, oh, he's a bit arrogant or what have you. But personally, I thought he's a great lad. He's very confident, but it's up to you how you take that. But I thought he was great. Obviously, a fantastic goalkeeper as well. And just on the mistake yesterday, it happens, doesn't it? I think probably one of them, Rich might agree. It's the easy ones that end up going in if it's something too easy to catch and you lose your concentration for that split second.
Yeah.
But those are the ones that can cost you. But like you said, he's made a one-on-one save with Mo Salah later in the half and kept it 1-0, which obviously didn't matter in the end, but it could have given Sheffield United a chance of getting the equaliser. So I think that's just great character from him. Made the save after his mistake. Obviously, everyone knows it's a mistake, but he's not let it affect him. Cracked on and made a good save, so he'll be absolutely fine, no doubt.
No, you're spot on. I think just a quick one, because just to make a mention, actually, that we do a show. So for everyone listening, we do a show ordinarily the day after the weekend's action, and we dissect the different good performances, not so good performances. And that one in particular, I'm going to touch on in the show this week, because I think there's a couple of really interesting things about that particular error. And you're right, we've all been there. And there's actually a lot of other factors that come into it, the conditions being a big one in particular. So just to make a little note that we will make a big deal of that in this week's show.
We will, Richard. Between the sticks was what you were looking for there. George, we're going to finish up. Rich will ask his customary last question. But before we get to that, when you signed for Hull, you said, I want to progress as a player. I want to play Championship football and kick on. My aims to get into the Premier League and play for England. Do you feel, as things stand, you're on the road to achieving that?
I think so, yeah. I think the way this season's gone so far, and I'd love to get promoted with Hull to the Premier League and see how that goes. But I think in the next couple of years, I want to be in the Premier League as a number one. And obviously, when you're in the Premier League playing, you've got every chance of getting in the England team. So my dream as a youngster was to play for England. And I think it's very achievable looking at the England keepers that are out there at the minute. I don't see any reason why I can't be up there competing with those guys. So that's my aim.
I fully agree. We always like to finish with the customary last question. It's been a fantastic interview, but George Long, the question to you is, what has goalkeeping given you?
Lots of enjoyment, lots of fun, ups and downs along the way, but I just love goalkeeping. It's a special position. It's just been great fun, to be honest. It's quite a privilege to have it as your job, turn up every day and dive around and enjoy yourself. So I just love goalkeeping.
Lovely. Well, Rich and I are off to do some bicep curls. George Long, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, fellas. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, it wasn't that weird, was it? Was it weird?
It was a little bit odd, mate.
I just think that's quite interesting because he does have really big arms. I noticed that.
You've mentioned it many times. Many times.
The fact that he doesn't do bicep curls is
why is this
incredible.
So fascinating to you?
Just because, do you know what? I interviewed Micah Richards a fair few years ago when he was at Manchester City, and I remember commenting on his body because he has a very good body. Does Micah Richards? There's a theme here. There's quite clearly a theme. But he said to me, "I've never spent a day in the gym," and I could not believe that. I know some people genetically look quite athletic, but to have the six pack that Micah Richards has, the biceps, and the same with George Long, and he has grown considerably.
It's getting weirder. It's genuinely getting weirder.
Okay, well, look, the interview itself was very good.
Yeah, brilliant. It's interesting because we obviously touch on and we interview people with in so many different positions. So, of course, a lot of ex-goalkeepers that we spoke to, a lot of A lot of goalkeeper coaches got a very different perspective, but George is very much in the midst of it. If anything, he's still very young for a goalkeeper, yet he made his professional debut, 8 years ago. Mm. So it's amazing to think that he's still so young for a goalkeeper, and yet he's got so much experience, and he has had a real roller coaster. When you ran through his career in about 30 seconds, speaking at 100 miles an hour, it really gave me an insight as to just how much he has experienced. And I remember certain times, and having known George for some time, we used to speak quite a lot. Actually, we still do, obviously, but we used to speak quite a lot, and I knew how dedicated he was to his craft. Like, I was very aware that he was doing the meditation. He was doing all the extras you could possibly imagine. But something that was interesting to me is that it sounds like he's changed his approach slightly, in that he realized how important it is to get the balance. And I think that is key, because it's very easy to allow goalkeeping to take over your life, which, look, don't get me wrong, if you want to be great at something, you have to be fanatical about it. I do agree with that. But at the same time, if it's to the point of getting you down, or it's to the point where you don't have balance in your life, at some point it's going to break down, or at some point you're going to start to dislike what it is that you do, because you need to have that balance. He touched on the fact that he plays a bit of golf now, and he walks a dog or does things away from goalkeeping that allow him to have that balance in his life. And that was the big message that came across to me.
There was something I picked up on that I've heard from you before, and it struck a chord, Richard. The fact that he said, I went from being number one to being number three.
And look, this will happen. I think every goalkeeper coming through, don't believe it's just going to be plain sailing and it's just going to be the same trajectory all the way to the Premier League. It won't. And I mentioned the Oxford one because it was interesting. I knew that it had a bit of a tough time at Oxford, but it just shows that, and Oxford were League Two at the time. So he's playing Championship League One with Sheffield United, one of the biggest clubs in the country, to suddenly going into League Two and finding it tougher. I had the same thing. I played, obviously, Premier League and Championship for Watford. I then go to Brentford. I didn't think it'd be easy by any means, but all of a sudden it hits you that, if anything, it gets slightly tougher, because it's a different game you're having to play. Suddenly, balls coming in a different manner and having that much more to deal with in League One, as opposed to the Premier League, where I felt like all I was doing was maybe saving the odd shot or picking it out the net. You know, it was a very different game. And by the way, that applies all the way down. I think lads I know that are playing now in the Conference South, in the Ryman, lower than that, if anything, it gets tougher and tougher for a goalkeeper, because there's so much more that you have to deal with. This is where I think, again, we talk about goalkeeping being a different sport within a sport, an individual sport within a team environment. I think this is a great case in point, that it's not necessarily that if, let's say, Alisson or De Gea or Edison were to suddenly go and play in League Two, that they'd be the outstanding goalkeepers. I'm not sure they would, because I think it almost takes a different type of goalkeeper to play in League Two than it does for one to play for Manchester City, for example.
Mm. The thing with Simon Moore is interesting as well, the fact that they became best mates. Do managers, are they in favour of that? I know that in your playing days, you were good friends with Ben Foster, good friends with David Button. You developed a relationship with him at Brentford. But Chris Wilder obviously brought Simon Moore in. Now, you want your goalkeepers to be competing. I know you want a harmonious relationship within your squad, but is there an element of a manager thinking, crikey, they're getting on better than I thought they'd be getting on with each other?
No, it's a positive for me. I think and you mentioned the first thing, as long as they are competing, and as long as it's the unwritten rule. It's like, look, we're not necessarily competing against each other. We're waiting for the manager's approval. We're waiting for the manager to choose us. We're both very similar. So Longy and Simon, me and Simon, when I was at Brentford and built a similar relationship, lovely, lovely lad. Like, why wouldn't you like him? But we both had the same objective. We knew that we both wanted to play in the team. So, it is odd, because there will be a time, I always remember, there was me and Simon Moore, I'll never forget, where one game in particular, he didn't know who he was going to play, and he sat us both down, and the manager did it literally 2 hours before the game, and it was almost like, I choose you, and he ended up choosing Simon Moore for that particular game. So it's a weird experience. Like, we're tight as anything, and then we're sat down in front of the manager waiting for him to make his decision, because he couldn't decide the day before as to who he was going to play. He needed to sleep on it. He needed to have breakfast before he could decide who he was going to play. So it is strange. Someone who's one of your best mates, you're then sat next to thinking, this could actually play a large role in the direction of our career. And actually, as it happened, from memory, obviously Si played and I didn't really play again. So, you know, decisions like that you look back on and think, of course, it does play a big role in the direction of your career. But look, I think most people, and look, I know Longy, he's a great lad, Simon Moore's a great lad, and they've got the understanding as to the position they're in. They can put that to one side, you know, and understand that, look, we are friends first and foremost, and now this is our career and this is what we're going to do. And at some point, naturally, you get split up. At some point, someone goes to a different club and you will still remain friends after that. Similar, you mentioned me, Ben Foster, David Button, many of the other goalkeepers that I've worked with over the years, Jack Bonham as well, of course, and many others.
Simon Moore, I like the way you say Simon. Do we call him that when he comes on the podcast? Is it Simon Moore? Is it Simon? Is it Morrow? Is it Simon?
That's it. I call him Simon, but everyone else calls him Morrow. So I think I've just got my name for him, which I've always called him that. Si. So that's it. He's Si.
Simon. Simon. So it's not Simon, it's Simon.
Simon. I never considered that. Thanks, Matthew.
Okay. Well, on that note...
What a note to finish on.
It is the end of this week's Goalkeepers Union podcast. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, more importantly.
We'll be back again very soon. No need to wait like you have had to wait in recent weeks. We'll be back next week with the next instalment of the Goalkeepers Union podcast in association with GK Icon, Goalkeepers 365 and Love Sport Radio. We'll see you next time.